On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York, and the host of On the Ground.
This is Adrienne Berg, and this is On the Ground. Today, we're going to have what I would call a masterclass with emphasis on the word coalition. 275 at least, and counting, organizations are part of this coalition. And you're going to learn from our guest, Bernard Siegel, how he does it really on the ground, everything from fundraising to creating a mission to how this coalition is formed continues. And I will tell you, I'll whet your appetite, because these are the names you know. Some of these organizations are the Diabetes Research Institute Foundation, Stem Cells and Development Journal, Christopher Reeve, the Reeve Foundation, and so much more. The emphasis, of course, is health span, as well as health care, prevention, and there's a real mission here, believing that we can take a good look at what we can do to engineer longer and healthier lives if we work together. So, Bernard, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Adrienne.
All right, I want to talk about what you're doing right now. There is so much scope to this that let's start this minute what's happening today on the ground with you.
Well, quite a lot. So the Healthspan Action Coalition has a huge goal. That is, we see healthspan as a human right, healthy longevity. And to be able to understand that lofty goal, which is aspirational right now, we want to move society in a way to bring together these converging technologies for all populations, healthy longevity. So that means funding, government funding appropriately for the research that's required, making sure regulatory systems are keeping up with innovation, working on workforce development so that there will be that bottleneck will be fixed and we'll have people in the biotechnology industry to do the work. And also the big picture is making sure that this goes to all populations at the same time, understanding these technologies can be very threatening. They're new, and we have to understand the cultural and religious mores of different societies and be able to do what we can within those societies to move this field forward. So how do we do that? That's a question. You have to know that the founders of the coalition have been working for over 20 years, largely as stem cell advocates with the scientists and the cross-sector that has built stem cells almost as a consumer movement, where individuals see it as a personal health issue, an issue for their family and their friends. And that has driven the field forward in good ways and sometimes in bad ways. But my colleagues and I have worked 20 some years plus building a movement in alliance with the science and the nascent industry, which is now huge, in cell therapies, filling an unmet need. Because when cell therapies came along, the infrastructure regulation, you had pharmaceuticals and biologics and medical devices and an infrastructure to support it and reimburse, but not for cell therapies. It was something different. So in 20 years, even though with all the scientific advancements, has the infrastructure built? Are those stem cells in the human body curing diabetes yet? No, but there were all of these hurdles. So a huge movement was created and successful.
Now we want to take a little bit of a look at the extraordinary experience within the United Nations that Bernard had. You'll be surprised, don't you guys go anywhere.
If you're interested in civil society and NGOs, please subscribe free to the NGO Reporter. We're gathering perspectives from the global NGO community worldwide and celebrating 30 years of connecting NGOs, the media, and civil society networks worldwide to the work of GNIC. Its constituents, the NGOs, and the topical issues related to all UN SDGs. So, how do you get your free copy? Well, simply go to gnic.ngo. And you know, you can also submit articles for the reporter. And if you do, you will be read by UN media and those interested in civil society, other NGOs. It's certainly worth doing. So please contact our editors and our staff at GNEC, GNEC.NGO.
And now we're back and we're talking with Bernard Siegel. And as promised, we're going to delve a little deeper into the way he's used the protocol and some very surprising and unusual protocol within the United Nations.
I worked in the United Nations when there was a proposed treaty that would have banned a part of embryonic stem cell research. And successfully, we derailed that treaty in the United Nations. You have to realize it took a broad community to do this. So understanding three years ago that the longevity space, the people that want to live longer, and the, I'll say with a smile on my face, the tech bros, as they say, the
right.
people that are putting all the money in Silicon Valley that have the tech billionaires, that many of them want to live extra long, healthy lives. They have all the money in the world.
People that are going in outer space are very interested sure. in immortality.
Sure.
Yeah.
So when you look at that world, well, what about the rest of us? And how are we going to bring these technologies to everyone? And it's not about longevity. It's about health.
A healthy longevity. Exactly.
So by adopting the term health span, we believed that we could create a community of organizations cross-sector to advance the field. And in those really 2.5 years, we have 275 plus organizations.
And these are very substantial organizations. Now let's go to the UN for a minute, because on the ground, of course, is part of our affiliates groups, over 1,700 of them, that are affiliated with the United Nations. And they, too, want to either champion, right, or perhaps make a barrier to certain things that are going on within the UN, and they want an impact. Now, you had an impact. You saw an issue, and you did take care of it. What did it take to do that? Was it meeting the right people? Was it writing the right reports? What would you say was the can opener that really helped you make the change?
Well, first, we need to bring this currently, you know, the International Court of Justice just recognized climate is a fundamental human right, a human right. Now, if you look at how that came about, that case, an advisory opinion of the World Court, I'm going to take you back to the time when I became involved with the UN. I had filed a case, Adrian, a law case back in 2003, seeking the truth of a really outrageous claim. A group had claimed they cloned a human baby. Mm. Now, at that time, that group was taken very seriously. And certain elements of society that were opposed to embryonic stem cell research, they sort of equated it to an abortion and the abortion debate, were trying to shut down this new field that would take donated embryo surplus from in vitro fertilization. And these cells could be taken and used to study and create any kind of tissue in the human body. Well, the group that claimed they cloned a baby, I was with legal experts and science experts that reached out to me and I reached out to them. We derailed that claim and it was viewed as almost cartoon scientists.
Yes, like a tabloid.
Right. Well, my personal story, I was a cancer survivor. I was a young guy at 48. I had colon cancer. I'm much older now and I'm fine, thank goodness. But the experience that I had had a few years later, and as I regained my health, I was willing to do things that were a little different from just my practice of law, where I practiced in South Florida and Miami. So when I did the case, the scientist, like Sir Ian Wilmot, who created Dolly the sheep, the first.
Yes, we all know that story. Interesting.
And Rudolf Janisch at MIT and Dr. Doug Melton, at at Harvard and others reached out to me and said, Bernie, we're starting the International Society for Stem Cell Research. Like, come up here to Washington. You did something really good for the field. You burst the bubble of this, these would-be cloners, and we need help. So when I went to the meeting, Adrian, there were 600 scientists, but I was like the only patient there, a patient advocate.
And as the real person, you were the real person in the room.
So the scientists, they speak in tongues. And if they're debating a foe or someone that's anti-science, well, you know, they're giving a scientific talk. So they tapped me. I became the de facto lawyer of the field, created a nonprofit organization called the Genetics Policy Institute, and brought on these leading scientists, Elizabeth Blackburn, a Nobel laureate, and others, the most prominent scientists in the field, and essentially backed me and the organization by reputation and allowed me to kick the door in Washington. And later, when we found out there was an effort to create a treaty, a world treaty, morally condemning cloning, but by the definition that they were using would also morally condemn a form of embryonic stem cell research. And that was unacceptable, and it was seemingly being jammed through the United Nations. Well, I took it upon myself and my new nonprofit, with the help of scientists, to fight back. And that led me to a very interesting observation of doing research. Well, what could the World Court do about that? And there had been a very notable decision in the World Court with a dissent written by the late Professor Weeramantry of Sri Lanka. And it was about nuclear weapons and whether they should be condemned.
So it was like a parallel.
It was a parallel. And this was something adopted by a resolution by the General Assembly seeking an advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice. Now, while the majority didn't condemn it, Judge Weeramantry's decision was profoundly influential at the time. And now just recently, we see what's happened, another advisory opinion by the International Court of Justice that was lobbied with the General Assembly. So what my organization did was to create a United Nations Emergency Petition of Human Cloning Policy Institute. That's what it was called at the time, the Genetics Policy Institute.
Right.
The United Nations General Assembly to request an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice on the legality of sanctioning human reproductive cloning. The idea is reproduction of cloning of babies should be condemned, but not stem cell research. I was able to use the scientists that signed this initial petition to go to the different missions in the United Nations, working with all affiliated NGOs in the United Nations to lobby for this petition to get an advisory opinion. And because of that, I was able to work with the Asian Group Legal Experts, which was called the Sixth Committee of the United Nations. And I met with them, and they had the Asian Legal Experts Group that represented all the Asian legal experts on the Sixth Committee. I went into the United Nations in the South Korean mission. I presented a case that we would produce the top scientists of the world for a scientific conference in the United Nations. And they endorsed it. So even though my group wasn't even an affiliated NGO, we were able to go to the Dag Hammarskjöld Auditorium that many of your NGOs are familiar with and create a science meeting that captured a whole news cycle around the world and presented the arguments that human reproductive cloning was something that was immoral, but not condemning stem cell research.
Let me tell you, Bernard, one of the complaints that we get about the United Nations is the complexity of its structure. NGOs that want to accomplish something wonder where to start in this vast, you know, almost bureaucracy. Now, you've taught us something here. One is think about the World Court, think about petitions, think about a legal framework on this. That's number one. Number two, think about the missions. but still in all, you as an individual not affiliated with the UN yet at that point, did need to understand how to operate and how to get a hold of the right people. Was it just perseverance, or was there something more to it than that? Either way, it's helpful to know.
Well, it's interesting, right? The first thing is that in thinking about what had been accomplished with the case and understanding, finding out, because I was educated, self-educated as an advocate, I read a law journal article by Professor Janet Dolgen at Hofstra that basically, as I was browsing through the University of Miami Law Library, basically fell into my hands.
Okay, a happy accident.
In a synchronistic way. And it was about the effort in the United Nations to ban cloning, but how the Right to Life movement were protesting outside of the United Nations. So I said, well, wait a minute. This is terrible for the field. It would morally condemn it. And I brought it to the scientists' attention and the International Society for Stem Cell Research. And there was something called the Coalition for Advancement of Medical Research, was a giant coalition that supported embryonic stem cell research in Washington. And I came with my scientists and I said, we're going to fight this. And then I was doing my research and I thought, well, I should stand in front of The Hague and protest. But then as I said, that's a great idea, but is that really going to do anything? So I did further research and found out this organization of scientists that were opposed to nuclear proliferation. And I got the playbook. I reached out to them and I got this. I'll even show you the little book that I got. It said, John Burroughs. I reached out to John Burroughs. The Illegality of the Threat of the Use of Nuclear Weapons, a Guide to the Historic Opinion of the International Court of Justice.
Uh-huh.
It was a guidebook.
And I
said, I think I can do the same thing with my organization. So I fell in with patient advocates. We started a giant patient advocate movement in favor of stem cell research. I was a grassroots advocate and I got organized some funding and we did the science conference. And not only that, I reached out to Christopher Reeve and the Reeve Foundation.
Now you have star quality behind you. Which is another point that is very useful to the folks listening.
So if you have a name in the news,
it's worth working with them.
Thank you, Adrian. That's right. So I wrangled an invitation to Bedford, New York, and this was meeting Christopher Reeve in person. It was 6 months before he passed away. And I brought up a film crew and I worked on a statement with Christopher that we recorded. So that is what I was able to play to the meeting in the auditorium at the United Nations, to a packed audience with the scientist. And of course, I treated everyone to a nice luncheon afterwards at the United Nations. But what gave me the ability to interact with the United Nations was very interesting because I had no entree to them.
Right.
But I realized that at that point in time, South Korea was heavily vested in stem cell research through the scientists that were proclaiming they had done therapeutic cloning of stem cells. By the way, it turned out to be a false claim, and it was a bit of a scandal. But at the time, everyone, because they read about it in Nature and these major journals, felt that this scientist was moving forward. So the Koreans were very eager when they read about the petition that we had filed to be supportive. So I said, well, I want to put this science conference in June because it, by some strange confluence, many of the scientists around the world will be in the United States in. Let's bring your scientists in. So they put me in touch with the representative of the sixth committee of the legal committee of the UN. And the head of the sixth committee, that the chair, was from South Korea.
Right.
So we helped assemble that meeting, and I was being treated very well. I was being called a professor. Professor Siegel came in and gave a presentation and said, you've already been lobbied by the opponents, but what they're doing is also banning a morally condemning stem cell research. Please allow us a platform to present the leading scientists of the world to the United Nations. And with the backing of that sixth committee, the Asian group of legal experts, we were able to find the date. I got the dean of the medical school at the Columbia University to chair it. And I brought in all the top scientists to give a scientific presentation that, as in the vernacular, blew everyone away. In other words, it dominated a news cycle. And we were able to derail this world treaty by a single vote in the sixth committee that postponed it. We were able to, in effect, defang that proposal.
But what you're saying, too, is, again, a point of protocol. Look at member nations. See which member nations, with regard to your mission, whatever that may be, have some stake in it. No, we always talk about the word stakeholders. Find the right stakeholder, and you did. And that was what I call the can opener that allowed that to happen. Now, we're going to take a little bit of a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about fundraising. You have also done private fundraising, as well as the organizations that belong. So that's a different kind of advocacy than what we would discuss. And I would say it's probably the number one problem that most nonprofits and NGOs have, fundraising, particularly today. So when we come back, we're going to ask you, how do you do it? And do you have hints and tips? Don't you guys go anywhere.
Are you interested in high-quality online SDG education programs at no cost and with a flexible schedule? Through the Global NGO Education Committee, GNEC, and Rutgers Preparatory School, the Innovation Academy is offering a variety of programs that address both local and global challenges that should be of interest to you. It provides an NGO a virtual platform for online courses and programs from top schools and other organizations designed for every grade level from world-class educators. Take advantage of this amazing opportunity to expand your knowledge, be connected, be inspired by NGO leaders and educators. You will get all the information you need at the Innovation Academy at GNEC, GNEC.NGO.
And now we're back, and let me reintroduce my guest because he's taking us on a journey. Taking us on a very spectacular journey. He's one of the original founders of the Healthspan Action Coalition, now with 275 organizations, at least in the coalition. And what he's really doing, I call it democratizing longevity. He's looking at stem cells, rejuvenative medicine, many of the things that are available today, but only to the very wealthy, making sure that they stay available to everybody and seeing how it can be something that not only increases health span, but health span for everybody. And it's not an easy task. He's an attorney by original career, an advocate now, and not a scientist. And yet he's been able to walk the walk and talk the talk. So let me ask you, I know part of it is that you personally had an illness that you explained to us. And you're fine. After many decades, things have been terrific for you. So there's certainly a personal issue where you're motivated for people to have longer lives and healthy lives. And it probably does come out in your sincerity. But it's more than that to raise money. So if you had hints and tips for groups that have a terrific mission, do know what they want to accomplish, but they do want to, say, create a conference, which was very successful for you. That takes some investment. How would you go about it, or how have you gone about it?
Well, one of the keys to the advocacy and stem cell advocacy and my view of the conferences that I attended, like the International Bio Meeting, the biotechnology industry organization with 20,000 people, you know, where are the patients in that? And as someone that was a patient and in league with the scientist, I realized that without the patient narrative, you couldn't get anywhere. Is it has to be something that a consumer would feel a personal stake in. And the success that I had was bringing in the patient world, the narratives, like Christopher Reeve I mentioned, and right, others, into this universe with the scientists, and later on with the commercial interest in the building of not only law and policy, but all that I was familiar with, but the nascent industry that's now a big part of the cell therapy industry and gene therapy industry that 22 years ago really barely existed. So the key is that in our funding for this, I was involved in a bygone era in different sports promotion events. I knew the field of promotion and endorsements. It was part of my law practice, of one of many things that I did. So I realized that you have to, a promoter of any cause or of anything needs to have something good and important to promote. Well, human health and those who are trying to crush hope, you know, you can't crush human hope. You shouldn't. So we were on the side of a technology that represents a salvation technology for all of our species, not only our species, other species, of being able to have a restorative repair system to replace and repair damaged organs with cells and cell therapies. Well, think about the cause and think about the stakeholders. So if we could bring together all the stakeholders in one place in a conference, not just a scientific conference or an industry conference, but one for where you can also bring in governments and government leaders, as well as patients. And it's not only patient groups like the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation or the Michael J. Fox Foundation. It could be a little family foundation with a child with a neurological deficiency. So our coalition, at least in the Healthspan Action Coalition, has tiny little organizations and massive organizations. Yes. Each one has its own story and narrative. So what we did is created an event that was originally called the Stem Cell Policy and Advocacy Summit, and then turned into the World Stem Cell Summit. And the way I did it, not having a lot of capital, but I realized the key stakeholders were the academic centers and laboratories. And there I had an in, because I was working with the top scientists in the world who would come to the meeting if I created a meeting. So putting my promotional skills to work, I found regions of the United States, and we even did one in Shanghai. And for 23 years, we put together the World Stem Cell Summit. And the first one that we did, it was with Baylor College of Medicine in Houston that provided—
Very well-known college, yes.
Our first speaker was Dr. Michael DeBakey, history. The first speaker at one of our summits. Then after that, we moved it to Stanford University, where they had started a stem cell program. And I had people like Dr. Paul Berg, the Nobel laureate that was basically the father of biotechnology, and others speak. And by that time, we were bringing in some of the politicians as well, and the political leaders that were interested in this. So we captured the imagination with those. And we would give an honor every year, honors, the Stem Cell Action Award. And we would recognize the heroes and inspiration and science and policy and philanthropy. And as we built the meeting, I realized there were sponsors that were willing to set up exhibits or basically donate to our nonprofit, which is in our tax code, a 501c3 organization by the Internal Revenue Service, who recognizes it's a charitable organization. And we were able to get donors. And we never turned down a patient advocate that would want. We would never charge, but we built a conference, and I would fund it every year by raising and having people to help raise sponsorship money and some philanthropic money to raise enough money not only to fund a conference that grew into a very expensive enterprise, 1,500 people coming to a place, but we would usually get seed money from the institutions involved. So when we did it in San Antonio, we had the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio and numerous nonprofit research centers in the area of San Antonio that gave basic underwriting and also provided a core audience, is these medical centers and medical schools and the region. So when our breakthrough meeting was with the Harvard Stem Cell Institute, and I say in a laughing way, maybe my SAT scores weren't good enough to get me into Harvard, but they gave money and a venue to be able to produce a World Stem Cell Summit.
So what I'm hearing that is very actionable, we'll say, very practical and actionable, is number one, break silos. You must think out of your own box. So if you have certain stakeholders that you're aware of that are important to you, that's not enough. You create a coalition with others who really do understand the other stakeholders, because you may not be aware of who benefits, everyone who benefits from what you're doing, and share the action with them. So that's number one. And the other one is double duty. Groups that not only want to be a sponsor and be known, but also want to offer attendees. So that makes perfect sense. It's a perfect closed circle. And this is not always the way every nonprofit or NGO goes about things. They too we're all in our own worlds. And look at what happens when you're able to break those silos. You did mention, for example, that the doctors, the scientists, talk their own language. People get lost, including funders, including philanthropists, when they hear that jargon, including the courts. But I think that there was actually a benefit with you personally not being a scientist. Because you could talk a different language that more people would understand.
Now, well, there's a real secret, Adrienne. When you're a lawyer and you have courtroom experience that I did, we lawyers don't always have to be scientists, but if we have a construction litigation case, we need to hire a construction engineer, and the lawyer has to learn enough about construction engineering to present their case. In this case, situation,
instant expertise.
Yeah, I was being tutored by the greatest scientist in the world, so I can hang in a conversation and understand the issues.
All right. And of course, once you could understand it without the scientific background, you could explain it to people without a scientific background. That's really so important. So when we come back, I'm going to ask you the question I ask on every show, the magic question. I'll tell you what it is now so you can think about it. If you had a magic wand, and there's a famous magic wand question. If you had a magic wand and you could make anything happen with regard to your mission,
yes,
what would it be? Don't you guys go anywhere. We'll be right back.
If you're interested in civil society and NGOs, please subscribe free to the NGO Reporter. We're gathering perspectives from the global NGO community worldwide and celebrating 30 years of connecting NGOs, the media, and civil society networks worldwide to the work of GNIC, its constituents, the NGOs, and the topical issues related to all UN SDGs. So how do you get your free copy? Well, simply go to gnic.ngo. And you know, you can also submit articles for the reporter. And if you do, you will be read by UN media and those interested in civil society, other NGOs. It's certainly worth doing. So please contact our editors and our staff at GNEC, GNEC.NGO.
And now we are back with Bernard Siegel, and he's taken us, as I said, as I expected, on a mentorship journey, which is he's been very successful as a mentor for our own health all over the world, because he is one of the founders of the Healthspan Action Coalition. Now, in our show notes, we do have the URL so that you can go on the website, Healthspan Action Coalition. You can get their newsletter. You can see their hints and tips for consumers. You can see every member and every logo for 275 in the coalition. But before I just simply write it down, tell us how to find you, Bernard, before we answer the magic wand question. How do we find the coalition online?
You go to healthspanaction.org, healthspanaction.org. We have sister organizations, the Regenerative Medicine Foundation, regmedfoundation.org, that is, and the project is the World Stem Cell Summit, worldstemcellsummit.com or .org. So, but go to healthspanaction.org, and I encourage the NGOs, many of which, if you're involved in the health space, science arena, might very well want to join the coalition, which doesn't cost anything. What we do is we are leveraging the strength of organizations and connecting dots for those organizations, because the people that have started this movement with me have so much experience in dealing in building coalitions. In the World Stem Cell Summit, we invited 150 speakers, usually I did by phone or email, to get 90 speaking slots. Doing that for 20 years, you'd be surprised how many people you know.
Called the Golden Rolodex. So, and as I said, this will all be written. You don't have, if you're driving and you're listening to this, you don't have to stop the car. You have it all on our website, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, Radio, iHeartRadio, and so many more. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you'll see the show notes and you'll find out how to access this wonderful coalition. So I gave you enough time to think about the magic wand question. If you could disappear a barrier or make something appear for your mission and you had total power, what would it be?
That's really a good question. All right. Total power is being able to forge this world movement. The aspirational goal is to have HealthSpan be declared a fundamental human right. Time that we're living now, the future shock of these converging technologies, who's going to benefit? We have to be able to create a global movement. And when you think about 20% of the world or whatever percentage living in grinding poverty,
yes.
Well, if you're in grinding poverty and bestow a 1,000-year lifespan, all right, what are you really doing here? So how do you make this a universal goal? And part of it is reaching communities that otherwise don't have power. I believe in the power of small countries. I really believe that because I worked walking the halls of the United Nations and realized they were able to move the needle. And if you look what the students in the Pacific Islands were able to organize and get this latest World Court advisory opinion about climate change as a recognition of that as a human right of climate equality. The same thing should be for HealthSpan, and it will change the world, Adrian. So what is to remove the barriers? Remove the barriers, you have to break silos. So I hope that the work that we're doing is a battering ram of breaking silos to get this thought in everyone's mind that these technologies will advance within cultural norms. In other words, we have to be aware, you have to be able to talk to people where they are.
Where they are.
And that's so this is a universal project that is going to involve AI, data, analytics, cross-sector. So the other theme is cross-sector. And we're able to, if you're able to create a cross-sector movement and bring in allies, that's the ticket. And that's the ticket to an NGO. It's not about just your organization, but how it can influence others and find allied organizations to move the needle.
Well, I certainly agree, and I will say that this movement away from thinking narrowly that stem cells are about stem cells or stem cells are about healthcare or stem cells are even about caregiving, but stem cells are about a human right, a much broader human right, changes the game. And that's where I think you've really been able to make a huge change. But it requires each person who's working in it to change their own thinking and their own game. And not be narrow and not be myopic. And I do know that when you're working on in a mission for 20 years and 30 years, we talk about burnout here and many of those things, you do lose track. lose sight. All the changes that have been around you. So look around and be able to reformulate your message or your advocacy to reach a much broader group. And in your case, Bernie, the whole world. So you've done a great job. Thank you. I thank you so much. And we will be promoting this. And I think it's certainly one of my favorite shows. For everybody else, you know what I say. Never stop making a change in the world.